I'm Poltergeist, and I make inappropriate songs about horror movies.
So basically, I just came to see some naked D's and A's for free. Take a peek, take a key. 12 cabins, 12 vacancies, 12 bodies, mother pray for me. I might go psycho occasionally. One body, too many, pray for me, cause we all go a little mad sometimes.
So happy ever after, just chapter after chapter after chapter. Massacre, make the Ripper look like an amateur ambassador of the slashers. Michael!
Lord of the dead, you can wake up in the coroner's bed. This is the hour for mourning and dread. Drain all the blood that was stored in his head.
All of the apologies that you can muster from your dread won't protect you on your bed. Nothing will from Pumpkinhead.
This is not a dream, baby. This ain't Halloween, baby. When I'm on the scene, this is what we call a scream, baby.
Subscribe on YouTube at Poltergeist OD. Follow me on Instagram and the Slasher app at Poltergeist _OD.
Welcome to another episode of Happy Horror Time. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and we are your hosts for today. I feel like do we need like a second line to that intro?
Sure.
Like, and we are your hostess with the most.
Happy hostess Twinkies.
It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm Tim Murdoch and I'm Matt Emmert. And then like, what else do we say? Like,
this is a podcast.
And this, hi, this is Matt Emmert. And that's Tim Murdoch, and we host a podcast called Happy Horror Time.
You know what?
It's really happy.
We can't be robots. We're humans.
No, we are humans, and it can't be called Happy Horror Time if we're not happy, Tim.
Because I'm sad. Cheer me up.
Well, you know what, Tim? I can give you something that'll cheer you up, because I know the P word is your favorite topic of conversation, and I'm not talking about pinball. I'm talking about the pandemic.
Oh, I didn't even say it. You did.
No. I know. I was going to say, but since I feel like we've broached that subject so many times, like, you know, it's hard to say that it's coming to an end, but restrictions are lifting. Let's say that.
True, true.
So that means, Tim, you can get back out there at the bars. You can start.
You know, I have to go where the fish are, Matt, and that right now is just swiping right, swiping left.
That's you know what? Like plentyoffish.com.
Well, you know what? It's been more exciting for me swiping right and swiping left. I've made a couple connections. You know, people say, hey.
And,
how
sup.
Are you?
Wait, my favorite, sup.
Right, and I like to get those sup ones between the hours of like midnight and 2.
And then you say, and then do they say D-pick? I can't D-pick? Believe I even, I
know, just like. Don't even pretend.
I'm trying to pretend like I don't cuss. Dick pick.
But you're on your third year.
Third year what?
In the relationship.
Yeah, we hit 3 years in September. I was like, third year what? Third year of being sober? No. Yes, it'll be 3 years in September. And that means that I haven't done one of those apps for over 3 years. Have they really changed that much,
no,
though?
No, I'm on the cleanest one, which is swipe right, swipe left. Tinder.
Okay.
So I just, Tinder. I don't want to give
well,
them.
Well, now, anybody listening, if you like what you hear, if you like Tim Murdoch, you can contact him on Tinder.
That's the thing. You can't even do that.
No. And I mean, also, like, we want you to listen.
I don't know if people didn't swipe on me. They don't know if I didn't swipe on them. No one knows anything.
Also, we want you to respect us for our content and not our sexiness.
Right. Like, everyone, stop oogling my body.
Yeah. Look, Tim wants everyone to stop being so into him and just be more into what we're saying.
Here is a story that will probably turn everyone off, but I have to share it because it's so fresh in my mind. It happened to me today.
Oh, wow. You mean I don't even know this?
No.
Okay, go.
Just like, okay. So I walk dogs. I help people out and walk their dogs. Okay.
Okay. I'm like, where is this going?
Okay. So today I grabbed a salad and I didn't see that it was like not a normal salad. It said kale salad.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And I know you don't like kale.
I didn't like kale. So I'm like walking around, but I did not know that kale's basically like coffee and it triggers you to poop.
Wait.
Yes. Wait.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Go on. I'm going to let you finish the story.
So I'm walking a dog and I'm like, oh my God. Because here's the thing. Dog walkers don't have access. We're out in the middle of nowhere with the dog.
That's
so I
true.
Thought, I've got to walk this dog back home. I've got to get in my car. I've got to drive home before anything can happen.
But here's the thing. You've got the poop bags with you, so why don't you just pop a squat
True.
Next to the dog?
You know what?
And
I'm not going to lie, it crossed my mind.
Oh my God. So it like came on fast.
It came on
Nature
fast.
Was calling.
Nature was calling, and I don't mean Jim Carrey's movie, the sequel.
Oh my God. So, what, so did you make it home without
made
a,
it.
An
I
oopsie?
Made it, but I was running. I was wow. It was a it
well,
was a, yeah.
Let me just tell you, if you haven't attracted people listening yet, yeah. This story is definitely going to seal the deal.
This story is making me feel like they're I'm human.
You are human, Tim, and guess what? Everybody poops. Yeah, everybody poops.
Not me though, I don't.
Well, apparently you only do after running full speed down the block. Wow.
You know, sometimes I just think I'm just talking to you.
I know. Well, you know what? You are right now.
Cut this whole story.
No, we are not cutting shit. Get it? See what I did there? Okay, enough of the small talk. We have some so this is what I want to say to our listeners. Over the last we've only really been doing this as co-hosts for like 6 months. But over the last 6 months, because of the pandemic, most movies, like big blockbuster releases, were postponed. So a lot of the movies we were reviewing were like a Netflix original or a straight to on demand movie. And I'm not talking bad about those movies. A lot of those can be really, really good. But finally, we got to see what I would say is like the first big wide release horror movie in a theater. I know, crazy. And we saw Spiral, as in the new From the Book of Saw sequel. And I was just kind of excited to see kind of like a big blockbuster-ish horror movie.
Me too. I was so excited. And I can't believe you didn't wait for me.
Okay,
Matt totally text messaged me and said, do you care if I go without you?
Tim and I usually see the movies together, but Tim was gone on his job this weekend. And like we had a bunch of friends that were just as excited about like a new horror release at the theaters because there have been so few. And so I told Tim, I said, I'll even go again with you if you want.
Seen it again? Or you can answer that.
Yeah, let's wait, because let's introduce Saw. So now here's the thing.
Chris Rock.
Yeah, and everyone, Chris Rock. So just to give a quick backstory, and this is going to be completely inaccurate because you know that we are not polished and not researched, but what I had heard leading up to this movie is that it was actually Chris Rock's idea to revive this franchise. Apparently, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently he was a big fan. He came up with an idea to like revive the franchise. They liked it. And then obviously he starred in it and he ended up being an executive producer. And I've got to say, like, I think that's really cool.
I love Chris Rock. I've always liked Chris Rock way back when he was on SNL with David Spade.
You know, I can't say the same. I'm not going to say I didn't like Chris Rock. He was kind of off my radar. Like I don't follow a lot of comedians. And so there's not a lot that I know of, but I knew Chris Rock. But when I read this about him, it like instantly made me respect him because that A, he's a fan. B, like he picks, like, can you imagine? It's like, hey, I want to revive that series. And it worked and they made a new movie and he starred in it. So I was impressed about that leading into this. With that said, I went in not having any expectations because the Saw series isn't my favorite.
Well, I just thought, I mean, are we going to start talking about the movie?
Oh yeah. Well, okay. What did you think? What's your opinion of the Saw series in general?
I like parts 2 and I like 7 and 6.
Not the original?
Since I just saw it recently, I didn't particularly care for it.
Okay,
I think Carrie Elwes is cute, though.
I'm the exact opposite. I loved the original. Thought it was so creative, so, like, engaging. Loved the original. And then starting with the sequel, it just lost me.
You didn't like part 2? I thought part 2 was great.
Not that I didn't. It just wasn't the same as the first one. And then 3 got even worse. And then 4 was really bad. And then I just stopped watching them until Jigsaw.
I saw them all in the theater.
The thing is, it just wasn't my cup of tea. Like, I wasn't into, like, the huge amounts of gore and just torture stuff. Again, it's totally a great subgenre in horror. It just never was my favorite series. I really love the original. I just thought it was done so well. It's so funny that you like the second one more.
The second one is I like the second one more.
You just like Donnie Wahlberg.
Donnie Wahlberg is cute, sure. I liked that the second one had a variety of characters and like they all like bloodier.
The first one was just the two guys, but
boring.
It just like
I'm kidding.
I just thought it was so clever at the time. Yeah. Obviously now you're like it's not clever. But they've done
it
eight times.
The first one came out in 2004. That's crazy.
But I mean, look, all I've got to say is like no bad talking about the Saul legacy because it has lasted this long for a reason.
Oh, no.
Chris Rock loves it. So, yeah. You know, but going into this, I will say I was excited because of what I read about Chris Rock and because any type of like reboot is like I'm willing to give another chance in the sea.
Were you excited about Snakes on a Plane star Samuel Jackson?
So I was because I do like Samuel Jackson. I will say I thought he had a throwaway role in this. Like, really? I thought he was barely in it until the end.
I mean, true. Any actor could have played that part.
But I thought they got him as a name. But anyway, okay, so let's set up, like, the plot basically is, it starts with, the opening scene was pretty good, I'd say. It starts with, like, there's this guy.
That was him doing stand-up. That what? Was him doing
Oh, I meant the kill in the opening scene after the remember. Opening. Okay, you don't remember?
I mean,
so
I just
you're following
it.
A guy at, like, a carnival or something. Yes. I mean, and so he is, it's a parade, I guess. And he is pursuing a guy who stole someone's purse, and he goes into, like, a sewer into where the subway runs. First mistake. Don't go on subway tracks, even if you're pursuing
a criminal.
There was,
a mannequin. He kicked over the mannequin, and then all of a sudden, a pig was behind him, wearing a pig mask.
Yes, and that's one of the things that this movie does well with skate. It did have a lot of, like, pop-out, like, slasherish scenes. Someone with a pig mask, toppled over him, I guess knocked him out, and then he wakes up, and
is grotesque.
He is hung over the subway tracks, and his tongue is attached to, like, I don't even know what that was. Like,
it took me a minute too first off, I saw the movie by myself.
I'm wondering were there other people in the theater?
There were like two other people, and I swear they were like 70 years old. I think they just walked in because they were like, this is a movie that's playing.
Oh, well, I was going to say if there were a lot of people and they're like, who's the creepy person who sees Saw by themselves?
I know. Well, you know, I don't think, I mean, no
I just cares. Said Seesaw. Seesaw. Seesaw.
But yeah. it was in the biggest theater. It was
in the world.
In the world, but it was at 4 o'clock. So I had to like retrain my brain okay, I'm seeing Saw.
Yeah,
I'm seeing Saw.
It's never going to get old. Oh, you mean because it's such a horror movie and you're seeing like
Seeing, I'm not seeing it like 8 o'clock with a group of people on opening night. Like it's just a different energy.
Well, the guy is, his tongue is suspended around these like blades that almost look like a guillotine or it was pulled out. He was being hung by something that was holding him up, but his tongue was pulled out of his mouth. And basically, as the usual Saw thing happens, a TV turns on, and it's someone speaking in a fake voice. Sounds like what Jigsaw used to use.
So his hands are tied behind his back, so he can't get it loose that way. So he's on like this thing like for his feet.
Basically, the tape says, he's a cop, and it's saying that the tape is saying, we know that you have falsely imprisoned criminals, and now you're going to have to get rid of the tongue that's told so many lies. So either you basically have to rip your tongue out to get free, or you're going to get killed by the subway.
His tongue gets ripped out.
No. You just like jumped.
Is that what happens?
What happens is he's first trying to struggle and I think get free without ripping his tongue out. The subway train's getting closer, closer, closer. Then it's like he rips his tongue out right as the subway truck or a subway car slams into him and he explodes.
Yeah, blood and
so
his
literally,
body is everywhere.
It was the worst of both worlds. He ripped his tongue out and got run over by the subway. Like, just if you're going to get run over by the subway, just wait and let it happen.
Yeah, I was like, don't struggle. I mean, keep your tongue if you survive.
He didn't believe the tape and he thought, maybe I can get out without ripping the tongue out. So anyway, explodes, he's dead. So then it switches to the main plot. And it switches to Chris Rock, who is a detective. His name is Zeke.
And he's like undercover in like his introduction, he's doing like stand-up. I mean, he's literally doing stand-up about Forrest Gump.
I found that cringeworthy. I don't know about you.
It was tough, but
it was rough.
And it was also weird to see Chris Rock older. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, when I picture Chris Rock, I think of him as
I just
younger.
Felt like, I don't know who wrote that. I don't know if those were his jokes. It just felt forced. It felt forced. It was like he's making Forrest Gump jokes in his usual style. So, like, for a second, I felt like he was just playing Chris Rock.
Right.
So it was so unnecessary.
It was very unnecessary. Yeah. But I was like, okay, and then it turns out, hey, he's undercover.
Yeah, he's undercover. He's a detective doing, like, a drug bust. But it gets to the main plot where they find out that this Jigsaw killer has delivered a package to the police station. And it has a tape, and it's calling out him, Zeke, specifically, and basically saying that this killer is taking revenge on police for wronging society, because it's a very, I guess, the police station.
Dirty cops.
Like, a bunch of dirty cops. And you find out that Chris Rock's dad, Marcus, who was played by Samuel L. Jackson, used to be the police chief who, like, basically covered up a lot of shit and just did a lot of dirty things. And first thing I have to say, he had retired. First thing I have to say, though, without getting too political, am I the only one who thought, this is very on the nose for right now?
Timely. And, well, here's the thing. Here's what took me out of the moment was that Marissa Nichols, who was in Scream 2, tiny, tiny role. Do you remember her?
Wait, who does she
play? She was one of the sorority
yes,
girls.
Yes, she's the Sarah Michelle Gellar's roommate. Yes. She's also on Riverdale. She plays Veronica's mom.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
She's gorgeous. She plays the new police chief who took over after Samuel Jackson
yes.
retired.
Okay, so here's why I was like, okay, we're clearly in a movie. Because, A, she's ready for, like, the covers of Vogue. And
as,
like,
a police chief.
Right. And, like, her makeup and hair just looks amazing.
You're like this. Yeah. No. I totally agree. She's beautiful, and she did not look like she was dressing for a police chief job. She looked like she was dressing for the runway.
I'm not saying she couldn't do it. She could totally do it, but it looks like.
Yeah, again, not saying that people, you can't be beautiful, sexy, and do that job.
I mean, I'm living proof.
Exactly. Tim is. Beautiful, sexy dog walker.
Right.
What I'm saying, though, is I think if you're going day to day just to the police station, I don't think you would get yourself so glammed
up. I don't think you'd get a blowout. That's all I'm saying.
Well, what took me out of it, well, first off, not took me out of it, but it was hard not to acknowledge how timely this was with, you know, the motive of the copycat killer taking their revenge on cops who, you know, are covering shit up, being dirty cops. And I hate to say this, but part of me, like, when I was hearing about that, was like, am I starting to sympathize more with the killer? It's like, because it's just like, and again, I don't want to talk about the state of police right now, but it was just hard not to think about that for a second, because I'm like,
well, that's the thing. Like, we already know that Samuel Jackson was shady, and then
Zeke wasn't. So you get to find out that this killer is taking their revenge, and you think they're targeting Zeke, but the next kill is another dirty cop who apparently, when Zeke, Chris Rock, needed him for backup because the guy had a personal vendetta with Chris Rock, just didn't help him, and Chris Rock ended up getting shot. So this guy gets taken by the pig jigsaw killer. And do you want to explain the trap he got put in with his fingers?
Oh, okay.
Talk about grotesque. Like, if you thought the tongue was bad, I thought that was the worst one.
He actually was a terrible cop. I
think they all were.
They all were terrible
except
cops.
Except for Chris Rock.
Well, his partner. Did we talk about his partner yet?
He has a new partner. That's another thing. A rookie cop who's played by Max Minghella from Handmaid's Tale. Very cute. But I'm sorry, Max Minghella. Same character he's playing in Handmaid's Tale, just like very soft-spoken, very kind of calm. And,
but I mean, who's going to play against Chris Rock?
No, I guess it's just like, because I've been watching Handmaid's Tale, and I'm like, I'm watching the same guy from Handmaid's Tale. But regardless, he's a rookie, and he, like, idolizes Chris Rock and his dad, and they're going on the case. Like, but anyway, the second cop who gets taken by the killer, about that trap.
So, he's in a, I guess, like a thing of water.
Yes.
And his fingers are in this like it looks like each finger could be torn off.
Yes.
If he doesn't,
they said that he, in order, if he didn't tear off his fingers,
right,
he wouldn't escape and
get electrocuted.
He would get electrocuted because the water was slowly rising to a live wire. And in order to get out, he had to tear off his fingers. And the reference, the killer always has these, like, metaphors. You know, right. It's like the tongue was because he had said too many lies. The fingers were, I think he fingered the wrong person. I don't know.
You just said fingered the wrong person.
I always think of Scream when he says, "You sounds like you fingered the wrong guy."
I still think the tongue one was worse. I didn't think, for some reason, I was just kind of like, fingers.
Really?
Fingers
because,
is gross,
okay,
too.
Okay, well,
but
the way they show these fingers being pulled off, because, again, what does the guy do? He doesn't get out before he gets electrocuted, but he also gets his fingers put off.
His fingers ripped off,
just
and
like
then he
the tongue guy. Like, literally, pick one or the other. If you're going to die, just let yourself get electrocuted. But he gets to his fingers, but they show in painstaking detail, like, the muscle fibers, the blood,
there
the limbs being pulled off.
There was one close-up that I was like, okay, that's pretty nasty.
I I was close to not being able to watch because,
really?
Like, well, only because, like, they really, with CGI, got the details.
It's just a movie.
Of the fingers. But I'm talking, it wasn't like, you know how you see movies in the 80s and you get a finger chopped off and it's just, like, blood squirting and just a finger? This, like, you see the tendons, like, everything being torn off.
I guess I was just, like, again, it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I was just like, oh, I'm seeing Saul. Like, I knew what
Saul.
I'm seeing Saul. But I was just like, I guess I wasn't affected, or maybe I'm desensitized.
Or maybe you're not human. I was kidding.
I'm
you're
human.
A serial killer. Well, anyway, so
yeah.
He gets killed, and then we get to, so, you know, Zeke is trying to investigate, whatever, and then Zeke at the police station gets another package that his rookie cop partner,
Charlie, right?
Max Minghella, the name of his rookie cop partner is Detective William Schenck.
Oh,
that's weird.
Oh, was this was it his child's name? He said he had a wife and child. Was Charlie?
Oh, Charlie was his kid. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he gets a piece of skin, and it's the same tattoo that his partner Max Minghella had. And they go to this building and find a fully skinned body that they assume is his partner.
Which I thought that was a huge red flag.
So I will say this: the one thing that I've made me think is a red flag is that this murder you did not see.
You did.
It was
not
an off camera murder, and you just see a piece of skin with a tattoo and then a body, and I'm like, why are they not showing this murder?
And that's when I, okay, since this is our podcast, this is what we
and
do,
we spoil everything,
we're gonna just spoil it. He is behind all this.
Yes, Max Minghella, the rookie cop, is the copycat killer behind all of that, pretending, you know, basically pretending to be into being a policeman and really taking revenge. But before, well, I feel like we've skipped over so much, but his reason was, as you find out that Zeke,
this was actually I thought at first I was like, oh, this is, I like how they weaved it all together. Like,
find,
I was like, gosh, this is kind of not great. But in the last
no,
second,
they had
it
made, they may, you find out that Zeke's old partner was a really dirty cop and was interviewing a guy who was going to testify against a dirty cop. And to keep him from testifying, he shot him and killed him. And you find out that was Max Minghella's dad.
And he
so
saw the whole thing.
He witnessed his dad being shot by a cop.
And then Chris Rock, like, puts his hands to his lips and goes like, shh, like that. Like you didn't see anything.
Well, true. But Zeke ended up telling on his partner and got him kicked out of the police force, which is why Max Minghella actually, he's taking his revenge on the police force, but he actually wasn't taking it on Zeke. Zeke was the only person who spoke up against these dirty cops. But we get to, there's one other murder, the beautiful Marisol Nichols.
So this is a major problem for me because, like, she was strapped down and, like, the person was going to pour wax on their face. There's not
they
a person, but
basically
it's like a trap.
Said, here's the thing. The difference between what she would have had to do to get free and the others was so unfair because ripping your tongue out is something as horrible as it is. You probably could do if you had
hers
to.
Was,
she had a blade in her spine.
To
and they
make
said,
her not walk anymore.
And they said, sever your spinal cord or hot wax is going to be poured on your face and you're going to suffocate.
So she doesn't. But I don't know why the killer puts what is that? They put over her
face. It's like
face
a cloth over her face.
A cloth over her face.
It's,
I was like, why
I think
put the cloth over her?
Well, it's the same reason they do that with water torture. It's more torturous.
Is it
lasts
it?
Longer. Yeah,
oh.
Because if water just went right on your face, you would immediately drown, you know. But that, it's torturous before it happens. So
okay.
This, she, so, and again, just like all the others, she literally severs her spine and suffocates under the hot wax. Like, everything is bad. All these people do every bad thing and still die.
If you're listening to this, you're probably like, why would I ever see this movie?
I know, but if you like Saw, you're gonna be like, oh, cool.
I'm sure the people that just made this new Saw Spiral hate to hear this, but I thought it was not as gross as the other ones.
Well, you'll be happy to hear I looked into it. The guy who directed this is the same director of Saw 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, wow.
So meaning he didn't do the original, but like, so your favorite, and he knows Saw traps. Like, so meaning he's not, it ain't his first rodeo
I mean, but I will say 4 is disgusting.
Oh, 4 was really disgusting.
It was
really disgusting.
So
that was
good.
The last one I saw before I was like, I'm done.
Ugh.
But getting to the end, when you find out that it was, and I have to agree with Tim, I guessed that it was Max Minghella too, because number one, why is he the only murder that you don't see?
Off-screen kill.
Number two, did you notice when they were staying up late to investigate Max Minghella? I was like, hey, my phone died. Can I use yours for a sec? I'm like, come on. Right away,
like,
you know
that's going to come back into play.
That, I was like, 100% you wouldn't just put that in
because
there for nothing.
Because Chris Rock had a joke. He goes, don't wear down my battery watching Twilight.
Yeah, because like, he's joking about him being young. But anyway, okay. When he finally lures Chris Rock, he captures him with the pig mask, and Chris Rock wakes up with his arm handcuffed to like a pole, kind of reminiscent of the first song.
It was a homage.
Yeah, and a homage.
It was a homo-rage.
It was a homo-mirage.
It was homo-rotic.
A mirage of homos, yeah. So he, and there's a saw, like an old rusty saw next to him, and you're like, oh my God, are they asking him to saw off his arm? But then, funny enough, there's a bobby pin right next to him that he uses him to get out, and I realized that was put there on purpose because Max Minghella was not against Chris Rock. He was against every other policeman.
But why even do anything with Chris Rock,
I guess? Because he wanted him to be the one to have to be forced into that final conflict
to
bring his dad to justice. So the very end, he's captured Samuel L. Jackson in this really elaborate trap, which, by the way, kudos to this killer for building these traps.
I mean, it was a little, like, what was
over
it
the
doing?
Top.
It was, like, little tubes sucking out his blood.
It reminded me of Nightmare on Elm Street 3, the puppeteering string scene. He has a bunch of wires in all of his, like, body parts, pulling him and holding him up, and blood is draining from his body. And basically, Max Minghella says, I'm giving you a choice. Either there's a gun here with one bullet. Either you can, shoot me and kill me because I'm the killer, or you can shoot this target, which will let your dad free. But if you do shoot me and don't shoot the target, your dad's going to bleed to death.
So
what does he do, Tim?
He shoots the target.
Shoots the target, but then he runs after Max Minghella and like beats the shit out of him.
I actually thought that was going to be a longer fight. It was actually over pretty quickly.
I think it's because Chris Rock is so much stronger than Max. Like he just overpowered the fuck out of him.
The main killer is like all bloody and like
the cops all come. Yeah, but. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go. No, it's
oh,
the best.
No, well, you go. You go.
No, okay. So, like, earlier in the movie, like, Chris Rock goes, like, shh to him, and then he has the big moment where he gets to go shh right back to Chris Rock. And I actually get chills talking.
Well,
about
because
it.
He escaping as the cops, but here's the best part, the cops break through the door, and even though Samuel L. Jackson was supposedly let free when this target was shot, his arm is still attached to one of the strings, which is attached to the front door. And when the front door comes open, when the cops break in, the string pulls Samuel L. Jackson's arm up like he's going to shoot the cops. And so cops, what do they do? They just shot and they shoot the fuck out of Samuel Jackson, like 25 shots, kill him. And Chris Rock is there. So not only did he lose his dad, but Max Minghella got away. And that's how it ends.
They're cranking the saw music, and like I was like, oh wow, they wrapped this up in a nice bow. I thought it was good.
Well, I will say this: like when I was watching this movie, number one, I was like, I hope they play the main saw music. So thank God they had little touches of it throughout, but at the end they like totally.
I know
play
why
it.
Didn't they just play it throughout?
I thought they should have played it throughout, but they at least they played it at the end. Number two, I wanted references to Tobin Bell because he is Jigsaw. They had like a few, and they showed his
Tobin
picture.
Tobin Bell was in all seven of them.
I know, but this is what the movie... It's like you don't do a Halloween movie without Michael Myers. Like
They referenced him. I was okay with Tobin Bell not in it.
They had a picture of him, which was cool, and they referenced him.
But I wanted Shawnee Smith. I wanted Betsy Russell.
You wanted all the Saw stars. Donnie Wahlberg, Carrie Elwes. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I was really impressed by
this.
Me too.
I mean, I saw it by myself, and I ate a whole thing of goobers.
Do you not eat goobers at the movies?
I mean,
when
no,
we go,
I mean,
you...
I ate it all, like... I'm not going to lie, I ate it during the trailers.
That's usually when I eat popcorn. I'm literally like done. I'm one of those people that's done with my popcorn when the opening credits are starting.
So literally,
I'm like,
the movie had my 100% my undivided attention. I didn't look at my phone once.
No, that's good. Well, I mean, I was impressed mostly because, like I told you, I had given up on Saw movies. Yes, the gore was over the top, but I expected that. So I wasn't like, oh God, I expected that. But it just felt more like a slasher movie than other Saws. I think because it wasn't just people trapped in a room. He was coming after each person wearing that pig mask one by one.
Right. And I think the movie should have been called Bad Cops.
It should have been called Dirty Cops, Creepy Pig.
Right. Oh, I like that. Creepy Pig, Bad Cops.
Creepy, Creepy Bad, Dirty Cops.
Creepy, Creepy, Pig Pig.
You know what? This is why we don't write movies, except for that short film that we made. Yeah,
that's right.
No, no. But I was impressed halfly, partly because my expectations were low and partly because I had already kind of given up on Saw movies. So I was really impressed because it was creative. I thought it was done well. I liked, even though I knew who the killer was, I still liked it. There was a real motive.
Just getting the Samuel Jackson in that movie shocks me.
I feel like maybe Chris Rock obviously was on from the beginning. I'm sure they were like, if we can get another name, like, you know, it'll revive the series. And who knows, someone who worked on it or Chris Rock or someone must have known Samuel Jackson. I can't imagine Samuel Jackson, like Chris Rock is like, I love Saw series, I want to be in it. But they got him either way. And Marisol Nichols.
You know what? Zeros on a paycheck help.
I'm sure. Well, I wonder what the budget was. They probably had a lot of money. I mean, should we check the trusty Wikipedia?
Yeah,
should we
check it
move
out.
On to, well, it said, it's
40
gross.
Million.
No, it, I don't know what the budget is, but you I mean,
could,
it feels
right there
like
at the
it
top.
Was, oh, the budget was 20 million. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was half right.
That is, you know, I feel bad because it's a lot more difficult to make money back now because people are just slowly going back to the movies.
I read that it made 8 million opening weekend.
That's good, but when your budget's 20 million, it's going to take a little bit more than
well,
that. But 8 million for now. And yeah, I think this is going to do well. I think it's been gotten mixed reviews with critics. I remember I had read a bad review, I've read some good, so but I would recommend it. If Saw isn't your thing, I still think you can handle this. There's two big gory scenes that you may have to look away from. But if you're willing to give the Saw movies another chance, if you had given up on them, this is the one to do it. Like, and if you like Saw, you'll love this one.
Yeah,
I think so.
Two thumbs up on my behalf.
Two thumbs up on your behalf, uh-huh. Tim. Hey, what's on that phone, Tim?
I'm That's looking up the next film.
Oh, Tim's.
I'm on top of it.
I always give Tim shit for being on his phone. Okay, so the next film that we watched was another. It was not a big screen blockbuster release, but it was supposed to be. Then Netflix bought it and released it. It's Woman in the Window. And by the way, both of these movies came out on May 14th, so they've been out for about 2 weeks or something. But Woman in the Window, starring Amy Adams, Gary Oldman, Julianne Moore, tons of people. Like,
oh, wait, I want to see the budget on this movie.
Oh, the budget on this movie was $40 million.
No,
wow.
Oh my god, I was right, kind of.
Well, okay, so this is going to take a little bit explaining because it's a little bit way different of a plot. It's not so much horror as more like a suspense thriller in the vein of like Gone Girl and those kind of things, like mystery-ish. But I've been seeing trailers for this since before the pandemic.
Oh, me too. I actually was like, oh, this looks good because it had Jennifer Jason Leigh, Julianne Moore.
And it's based on a book, a novel that came out in 2018 by the same name.
The only
name.
Person that I know that read it was Hiko.
Well, yeah, in the world. No, I think tons of people, our friend, but tons of people read this book. I think it did well. It was it was written by AJ Finn, which I found out with looking on Wikipedia that that's a pseudonym and the actual author's name is Daniel Mallory.
Oh, he looks cute.
Well, maybe you can talk to him. But
well,
he wrote the book.
I'll swipe right.
He wrote the book and they turned it into a movie and great, great cast. But basically involves this woman. Amy Adams is playing.
She's not glamorous in this movie.
Dr.
She's a
Fox.
Cat lady.
She is basically agoraphobic. Hello, copycat, the
That's
movie.
Right. Hello.
She and she's separated from her husband and daughter, and
who she talks to
on the
every
phone
day.
Every day, which right away you're like, that's kind of weird, but they're separated. But she lives alone, and the biggest thing is she lives alone in this humongous house,
which is very accurate. It's New York, right?
I don't know if it was. Yes, it was New York.
Okay.
It was. Yes, it
that's,
was one of the boroughs.
It was
wasn't
so,
Manhattan.
This is what I know about New York. That would have cost millions.
Billions. It has multiple floors. It has a basement. She has a tenant in the basement named David. Yeah. But she lives alone in this big house. She can't leave. You know, you can tell she's a little like
off.
Yeah. So she first meets like a new family moves in across the street and it's very Rear Window because she's like watching them
and
everything.
First off, no one has blinds.
Oh, in New York or just
I mean,
I have blinds.
In this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean that? Yes, everyone across the street does not have blinds. They don't close them.
Yes, I see
them.
You have blinds.
Yes, I know. I forgot. I didn't know what you meant. Oh, so she sees that there's this new family and she meets the teenage son named Ethan. He comes over and she's able to let people in.
Right.
She just can't leave.
And for being 16,
he was acting very young. He was acting a little off. He seemed like almost like there was just something off about him.
I don't want to say slow, but I'm going to say slow.
I'm not sure that's the politically correct
term.
Well,
I know. What is that?
Let's just, well, I just thought he was kind of socially awkward. I wasn't sure. I just knew that something was a little off, and you can tell, like, something's off with his family dynamic. He seems very afraid of his dad. And, but, Amy Adams is a child psychologist. So she immediately is like, if you need to talk, you can come over. And she, big mistake, gives him a key. You just met this fucker. Don't give anyone you just met a key.
I give people keys to my heart.
Well, how many keys are out to that?
Well, you know what?
Oh, I'm sorry. Your heart doesn't even need a lock.
Broken.
Oh, but if you, but do you ever have a total eclipse
of my heart? Yes.
Okay, good. Anyway, so she gives this key. Then it's like Halloween, which I loved. People are egging her house.
That was cool. And she was freaking out about it. But she can't go outside.
She can't go outside to tell anybody. But Julianne Moore shows up on her doorstep, comes in, and she's like, hi, you know, and immediately
then she asks a lot of questions, and I think it's one of the best scenes in the movie between these two women.
Julianne Moore is a little kooky in this, but yes. Here's the thing. Immediately, and this is what I thought was weird. Amy Adams says, you're Jane Russell, right? As in Ethan, the kid's mom. And Julianne Moore never says yes. Did you notice that? She never confirms. She just kind of smiles and says, what would make you think that? And she's like, oh, I met your son. And literally, she never actually confirms, but then she talks about how her son is Ethan. So I'm like, something's a little weird here.
Right, and the fact that she didn't answer that from the get-go, it raises a lot of questions for the viewer.
Exactly, and it also makes you think there's something else going on here. But they kind of get along. They have some wine. I think Amy Adams likes that Julianne Moore is like a little crazy like she is.
Well, you
they
know
talk.
What I found interesting is like agoraphobics can not go outside, but they can let people in.
Yeah, because the anxiety is over leaving your safe place. It doesn't mean you can't have people into your safe place.
What do I have if I have anxiety of letting people into my house?
You're a freak.
Oh, okay. Go on.
No, I think that would be, is there a phobia
for really
of strangers?
For a diagnosis
social,
from you.
Listen, bitch. No, a social phobia, homophobia.
I don't really have it.
Of course, I know. But there's got to be. There is something like that. But anyway, so Julianne Moore leaves, and she does leave a little drawing, and she signs it Jane Russell. So obviously you're like, okay, maybe she is the mom, whatever. Anyway, couple days go by, and then Amy Adams hears fighting across like the street, and she sees Julianne Moore gets stabbed. But
and
you don't see who stabs her.
And it's really interesting the way they do that is because it's like you see her back up, fall down, but like there's like a, what's that called in between windows? Just
like the pane or the window frame.
So holding up the whole place. And so you never get to see who is doing the stabbing.
Yeah. So of course they're setting it up so that she doesn't know. But remember, she knows she's met the son and she's heard that the dad is abusive. The dad, I forgot, she did
Gary
meet
Oldman.
Gary Oldman. She did meet the dad who was very like stern with her. So you immediately think, oh, Gary Oldman must have killed Julianne Moore, his wife or whatever. So she calls the cops.
And here's the thing. The cops are sick of her.
Well, yeah, after a while. But the first time she calls the cops, they're just like, what the fuck? Because she says, you know, this guy killed his wife, Jane Russell. And then Gary Oldman shows up there and he's like, what are you talking about? This is my wife, Jane Russell. Enter Jennifer Jason Leigh with a similar blonde hairstyle. So you're thinking, and this is all in the trailer. So like, you know that this thing. And Amy Adams is going nuts, and Ethan's there, and she's like, Ethan, tell them this isn't your mom. And Ethan's like, you haven't met my mom. You don't know her.
Right.
And, like, nobody's backing her up, so Amy Adams looks nuts.
Right, and, like, this little shit.
who
she gave the key to.
But at this time, you're thinking, what is going on? Because, obviously, your first thought is, did they just get an actress to impersonate Jane Russell?
Right. I actually thought that, like,
he hired someone else.
Right, like, my movie brain was like, oh, this is all just to make her look crazy.
Yes, like, they really did kill the mom, and I was thinking maybe the dad killed the mom, the son was too afraid to say anything because he didn't want to be killed also, and they hired someone to
do it. Right in the middle of the movie kind of takes like a left turn just to like, why is she an agoraphobic? And it like has this flashback.
Well, that's a little bit later. That's after she calls the cops back the second time, because that's when they finally realize, yeah, because what happens is she is like, nobody will believe me. No one will believe me. And she gets an email from an anonymous person with a picture of her asleep in her house.
That's meaning right.
Someone has broken into her house and been, so she knows something is going on. She calls the cops again. They bring in the whole Russell family. The Russell family with Jennifer Jason Leigh says, this crazy person's watching us. She's causing trouble.
This seems very much like a play. It's like all the characters are there. The police are questioning her. And then she has the flashback.
Now you can tell. Then she has the flashback. And well, the flashback happens. And this is news to the audience, because she says something about her husband and daughter. And the cop's like, ma'am, your family's dead.
Right.
And she has this big flashback.
She walks over to the kitchen and it's kind of cool. It's like they have all this snow on the ground and they have this upside down vehicle right in the middle of the living room. I'm sorry, the kitchen?
Yes, it's all CGI. And I will say, I know you liked it.
I thought
there's so much CGI in this movie. Even like the raindrops are so overly crisp and everything that it sort of took me out. So the scene where they like worked the car in the snow into her living room,
it made me feel like I was drunk without drinking.
It was too produced. Yeah. Like it almost got to be. Well, anyway, they flashback. They blah, blah, blah. She was, again, anytime you see anyone in a car in a horror movie, what's going to happen, Tim?
Crash!
And not just that, like, fatal car crash.
Right, and like, so she's having a conversation with her husband, and basically it comes that she cheated on her husband, and her daughter's in the backseat, but they're still trying to go through with Christmas.
Yeah.
And he's like, why are we doing this? And then, this is actually a really good scene. There's a phone call, and it's... We're assuming it's the guy she's having an affair with, and he's like, you pick it up. And it gets awkward.
And he, like, they struggle with the phone, and then she turns off the road because it's snowing, and the car, like, you know, does 25 flips or whatever.
Her ex-husband, soon-to-be ex-husband, and her daughter pass away.
They both got killed. And the husband's played by Anthony Mackie, who's also Falcon in all the Avengers movies, and he's hot.
I don't watch those films.
Well, I mean, you don't have to watch them to know that.
I actually did recognize him.
Yeah, he's I mean, it's not a big role, but it plays him. So she snaps into it, and it's almost like she realizes, like, epiphany, yes, her family's dead. All those phone conversations she's having were all in her head.
Ugh.
And all the medication she's taken for all of her anxiety and her issues basically have been causing hallucinations.
And so she talks to a therapist and, like,
And she apologized to the cops and the family. She thinks, oh my God, she must have hallucinated Julianne Moore and the murder and the whole thing.
Right.
You know?
And understandably.
Yeah, well, because, and also, like, the thing is, you can't even fault the cops or the family for thinking she's hallucinating, because she's been talking to people who are dead for
years.
She takes a ton of pills. She knows she's off. So then you think it may be going in a different direction. Maybe did nothing happen. But finally, she...
She decides to kill herself.
Yes, but she decides she's going to kill herself.
She's going to videotape it in, I guess, OD on a bunch of pills?
Well, she was going to videotape almost like a will, like explaining how sorry she is for the accident and, like, you know, whatever. It's like her last thing. Well, then she happens to be going through pictures she
took. Not that I'm going to commit suicide, but I would write a letter. I think there's two...
But when there's so much technology, it's so much easier.
I'm just saying, like, people could watch that over and over and over, and if I didn't look great...
Well, you'd have to do filters on them.
Oh, okay. You know, I'd probably use, like, a fun Snapchat.
I highly doubt that's the thing you'll be thinking of right before suicide, but
True.
Tim, you're like, how am I going to look when they see this video?
But, like, they do make a point of saying, like, how she's kind of laughing.
You know what I love? That she keeps messing up and then starting over in the video. And again, it's like... It's a suicide video. Like, it doesn't need to be perfect.
Right.
Yeah. So she's, like, scrolling through pictures, and she happens to see a picture she took of her cat the night that Julianne Moore was there. And she sees in the reflection of a wine glass Julianne Moore, and she realizes, oh my God, I wasn't crazy. I'm not crazy. I did meet this woman, whoever she is. I did see her get murdered. So she, like, freaks out. She goes to her downstairs tenant, David, who was a little sketchy, and you're wondering, he had a woman over at some time crying, and you're wondering,
was that her? Julianne Moore.
She confirms, she's like, look at this picture, I knew it, did you know her? And he's like, actually, yes, I do. And he literally, like, reveals everything in a conversation. She's Ethan's birth mother. She's not Jane Russell, like she said she was. But she is Ethan's mother. She's her birth mother named, I guess her name
Kate.
is Katie Melly. And so, and apparently there was a lot of shit between her and the Russells because she wanted to get close to them. They wanted her away. A lot of struggles. So you're like, oh shit, well then this happened. Someone must have murdered her.
And it was...
Well, right as David's telling her that, he gets attacked by Ethan.
The son.
And you're thinking, at least I was, the whole time you're thinking it's got to be Gary Oldman because, he's the abusive one.
Son, yeah.
Exactly. He gets attacked and murdered by Ethan pretty brutally. Yeah. And
so here's where the movie goes off the rails.
It does go a little off the rails. First off, did you notice suddenly Ethan is totally different?
Yeah.
So I guess the slow act. The socially awkward act at the beginning was totally an act.
It kind of reminded me of Primal Fear. Oh my God, I'm really dating myself.
Richard Gere and Edward Norton.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yes, it was like an Edward Norton performance where he's like, I'm not like this. I'm like this.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually good. Well, and then he explains to, of course, because every killer before they kill the main person has to explain everything.
They're like, here's the monologue.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Before murder, I'm going to do a monologue. And he talks to Amy Adams and basically admits that he murdered Julianne Moore because she, even though he was her mother, like she was trying to get too close to him. And he also was just wanted to be a killer, I think.
Yeah, he was like, it was like this weird explanation. Like, I like to, what's that like when?
Watch people when they're dying. Yeah, really sick. Like, he's really like, sick. I love that moment. Like, he said he had been sneaking in for the last week because he had the key. He took the picture of her when she was asleep. And he said he actually just wanted to watch her commit suicide, to watch while the life drained from her eyes. Like, that is so creepy.
Yeah, that's when it made me feel like I was watching a play turned movie.
Well,
I was like,
it was like, and again, maybe the book handled it a little differently, but they probably needed to like to wrap it up quickly. So they
and have it be exciting. Yeah. For the viewer.
Well, obviously, Amy Adams is not going to just, Amy Adams not going to, now she realizes she's not going to kill herself because she was right. And this is the killer. So they have a big struggle.
For being a cat lady, suddenly she knows how to fight.
Well, they go up to the roof and in this pouring rain, which is very CGI'd, but here's where it gets extra CGI. There's this really brutal attack where Ethan, he has a, I think it's like a garden hoe type thing.
It's a hoe. Take the hoe.
He takes the garden like hook thing and just like slams it into the side of Amy Adams' face.
Three holes in her face.
And she's like struggling like, argh, argh, and it's with clearly three CGI, hooks in her face. And it's so CGI'd.
I still was entertained.
It was entertaining. It definitely was. But it was so like.
Over the top.
And I figured either they've got to be trying to stay true to the book or they just wanted a really over-the-top attack.
And it shocked me. I mean, I was like, ooh.
It's like in her face. But anyway, she finally struggles with him on the top of this like glass window thing and then gets and pushes him through and he falls through to his death. Yay.
And then she gets to look like the glamorous movie star that she is.
Oh, well,
she
but oh, you, that's boots. The well, that's before she in the
oh,
hospital.
That's right, that's right.
The
I
hospital.
Forgot, I forgot.
You love those glow up scenes, right? Yeah, no. She's in the hospital. The detective comes and basically apologizes and said she was right that the mother had been killed, that Ethan had killed someone before that the father knew, and that the father and Jane Russell had helped him like cover it up. So basically, they were being arrested and everything, and he apologized to her. And then switches to, like, 9 months later,
and
that's...
she's like, then she's got a blowout.
She looks great, and she walks outside. She, like, says goodbye to her place. She's moving.
It looks like a big Hollywood movie. And I think that's, like, because when you're watching, you just know that, like... They did nothing glamorous with Amy Adams throughout the first half of the movie.
Until that scene. But the one thing I will say is that, like, someone who has severe agoraphobia, I don't think in 9 months is... They showed it like she didn't have a care in the world.
Well,
like,
and also,
walks
like, those
out,
huge holes in her face were, like...
Totally healed.
Scratches.
But she walked out, is walking in the street, like, not a care
in
the world.
Well, it's a big commercial Hollywood ending, which is fine with me.
And it was good, like, and you're glad that she's healthy again. It's just, like, it was... Again, and I just feel like, especially after the traumatizing fight with a murderer and everything that happened, well, I guess it had been 9 months.
But
she's
also been beating herself up because she cheated on her husband and then
caused their death. Yeah,
yeah. So it's like,
but again, that is so much trauma that, like, that's something she's going to live with for the rest of her life. I don't
I
know if it's
still,
just like, hey,
I would
I'm good.
Still be a cat lady,
exactly, and I would probably be catatonic. Like, I just think
catatonic.
Overall, I liked it.
I liked it.
I enjoyed it. I know that didn't sound very convincing. I guess I hate to always do this where we compare the two movies we're watching, but how can
they're
you
so
not?
They're so different.
I will say I preferred Saul. Is that weird?
Oh, no. You know what? I liked... Oh, God. Now I'm just becoming Switzerland. I liked them both.
But is there one you liked better if you had to
pick? I think I liked Saul just because it wrapped up... I thought the movie was such chaos that I liked the way Saul wrapped up. Whereas I thought the other movie just was... It was too much of a bow.
Yeah, I thought that I liked Saw because I thought it was kind of a creative twist on the series. I enjoyed it more. Woman in the Window.
Do you think you would have liked it better if you saw it on the big screen?
Woman in the Window. No. Well. I didn't like it. To anybody who's listening, I recommend both of these movies. I mean, everyone has Netflix, so you can watch Woman in the Window for free. And Saw, I think, was worth it. I think it's just Woman in the Window. It was just, I felt like it needed to be like a mini series. Like, I haven't read the book, but I'm sure anyone who has, I'm sure there was a lot left out. It just felt like they were really jam packing it all together. That's why I think.
That's interesting you say that because I thought
I thought it should have been shorter.
No, I thought they could have done more twists.
That's what I mean. Mini series, like say it was a four night event or four different 2-hour episodes
on NBC.
Or something. I think it could have benefited from that. It felt like a lot. I'm not a fan of, if you need CGI because you're doing like Star Wars or something, that's
so
fine.
Unnecessary.
But if you're just doing an apartment in New York with rain, do you need CGI?
No, and that's the thing. Like, I can tell that they filmed that on a soundstage.
Oh, yes.
Like,
a ton of stuff on us. I don't know. Because it had a $40 million budget.
I think that's exactly it. I think they wanted to make it look like old Hollywood.
It was going to... I mean, think about the cast. A huge cast. It was supposed to be released. And it was they probably thought they'd make a huge amount of money based off of a book. How many movies have done really well that are based off books like Gone Girl?
How does a movie that... I mean, this is going... Who cares? But how does a movie on Netflix that costs $40 million make its money back?
I don't know the specifics of that. I know that Netflix has to buy the rights. Well, they have to buy the rights. So I'm sure they pay a hefty penny. I'm sure there's advertising from people involved or people that want to advertise with Netflix related to the movie. Like, I don't know the specifics. And also, they probably get some cut of people's subscriptions. I don't know all the specifics. But you do make money.
Please,
but it's not
know
like,
them.
I know. And maybe I'm totally wrong. If I'm wrong, someone who's listening, tell us how movies make money but on Netflix. But that's what I would assume. I'm sure there's other facets to it. But yes, it's not as cut and dry
facets.
As...
Facets? That's a 50-cent word.
Facet?
Yeah. I don't, okay. When do I ever use that? When do
it's
you
only,
ever use
it's
that?
Only five letters.
Listen, I've never used it.
What I mean is that other facets, it's not as cut and dry as just like ticket sales, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But either I'd recommend both movies. It's just I enjoyed Saw more. It's more straight horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the other one is going for an old Hollywood look because she was watching old Hollywood films throughout the movie.
Good performances. I will say the acting in Woman in the Window, Women in the
yeah.
Woman.
There was
in the window.
No weak link.
No, they were all the performances were great. Like even the kid as a crazy person was good.
Yeah.
You know? So obviously amazing cast. It's just it just needed. I
you know
it
what?
Needed a
I'm going to say something controversial, and then we can wrap this up.
Yes.
I thought Chris Rock, like I don't want to say he overacted, but like he. There was I guess I wasn't used to seeing him play it so like...
Seriously?
Yeah.
I don't think... I'm neutral on Chris Rock's acting in it. I don't think he was bad. I don't think he was great. I think he seemed like he was playing Chris Rock
right,
as a
right.
detective.
But I mean, that's what I mean. Like, I guess it took a while for my brain to adapt to Chris Rock being like...
A serious person hunting down a killer.
Yes,
yeah, not
yes,
just
yes,
doing
yes,
jokes.
Yes.
Especially when his first scene is making Forrest Gump jokes. Yeah.
You said Forrest.
Farst.
Fart Gump. Well, on that note.
No. But hey, guys, you know what? What if we were like, hey, don't watch either of these. Just watch Forrest Gump.
You know what? Just watch Forrest Gump.
I was kidding. No. Two good movies. And we're excited about, just so ever our listeners know, like as new horror movies are coming out in the movie theaters, we're going to start seeing these and reporting on these. So it won't just be these like little known straight to
DVD.
Not that there's anything bad with those, though.
Hopefully I don't have to see them alone.
I know. I'm going to see him without Tim forever.
It's
just
fine,
kidding.
It's
never
fine.
Again. We'll see. Just don't go away for a weekend for work.
Listen, I can't. My job's unpredictable.
Anyway, well, thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
And enjoy whatever you're doing.
Happy horror time.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you haven't already, please like and follow our Happy Horror Time page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time to see all our glorious posts.
If you want to contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. Feel free to give us movie recommendations, interview suggestions, or just tell us how wrong we were about something.
We want to give a special thank you to our patrons for their support. If you'd like to be a patron, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime to sign up. Patrons get access to our monthly bonus episodes and exclusive content. We've actually built a pretty good sized library of bonus content by now, and there's much more to come.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And we hope you've had a happy horror time.